Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Today, we continue our conversation of books on color with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library. Hi, Jill.
Hey, Mindy. How are you?
Good. And Laura Reckford, executive director of the Falmouth Arts Center. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Yeah, so we had so many, you two, I should say, had so many books last month that we just couldn't possibly get to them all, so we thought, why not continue, right?
That's right, and we also had some really great suggestions from our listeners as well last month, so I hope we have more today.
I have to
just mention one thing which has changed dramatically since last month, which is the Falmouth Public Library is now open to the public as of last week.
Yes.
So our world has changed dramatically since last month. And we're actually now open Tuesdays and Wednesdays. We now have longer hours, so we're open 10 to 8:30 on Tuesdays and Wednesdays rather than 1 to 8:30. So we've started a new adventure.
Yeah. So, Jill, how does that work? Obviously, you can't have the library full of people. So are you limiting how many people come in? How is that working?
Well, right now, we don't have to limit how many people are coming in because people are limiting themselves. But one of the things we've done, for example, is we've taken away a lot of seating so that people don't stay sort of for the whole day. And that is probably the biggest change, other than we're all wearing masks, obviously. We look like bank tellers now because we have plastic up around our desks. So there have been a lot of changes in the building, but the basic, you know, coming in, coming out has not changed. Everybody is welcome, and we are up and running. And I think that the thing that people most missed was browsing, and so browsing is back. But we do find that most people are sort of coming in, getting what they want, and leaving again, which is fine with us. And we hope that people and one of our big changes is we now let the current issue of magazines circulate. Which we used to have people sit in the building and read, and now you can check them out. So,
are the other libraries open now too? Do you know?
Well, East Falmouth, our branches are open, the East Falmouth branch and the North Falmouth branch, but I don't believe that either Woods Hole or West Falmouth, and most of the Cape libraries are still closed at this point, but they're probably doing some kind of curbside pickup, which is what we were doing all summer. It's a big adventure.
New world, And we should mention, if you have some thoughts on Books on Color, we would love for you to share. You can either give us a call, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So Jill, start us off.
Okay, well, I'm starting off with a book that I actually mentioned last time. However, I have new information about this book, which I need to share, and because you had commented about the sadness of this book. This is a book called My Private Property by Mary Ruffel, and in it she had a whole series of poems about different colors. Here's a little bit to just give those a taste who were not here with us last month. Here's a little bit on red, and she writes, "Red sadness is the secret one. Red sadness never appears sad. It appears as Nijinsky bolting across the stage in midair. It appears in flashes of passion, anger, fear, inspiration, and courage, in dark, unsellable visions." And she goes on from there. But what I discovered after the fact was at the very end of this little book that she wrote, there were acknowledgments, and then there was this author's note, which is very pertinent. Her author's note was, "In each of the color pieces, if you substitute the word happiness for the word sadness, nothing changes."
Aha.
So if you would like to read these as happy poems rather than sad poems, you have that option.
All right. Good.
And the book was My Private Property by Mary Ruffel, and she goes through all the colors. So I'm pleased to let you know that.
I'm happy to hear that. Laura, what have you got for us up first?
Well, first, I did want to mention the Falmouth Arts Center is open. Jill will appreciate this. We've been open since late June, but my bragging point all summer was, come visit, we're never crowded, because people aren't, it's not the usual bragging point, but this summer it was. People would have the galleries to themselves, and people did enjoy coming in and browsing around the galleries and knowing that they might be the only ones there. So we are yeah. open daily, and we're never crowded. That continues
okay,
to
good
fall.
To know.
And I realized last time I went through my home bookshelves to pull out books, and this time I went to the Art Center, which has a small library of books for artists, and I realized that I hadn't even gone to that bookshelf yet. And also in this world of Zoom, where a lot of our art classes are now on Zoom, and so unlike in the past where the classes would take place in a classroom and I wasn't there, now I'm basically in every classroom because it takes place on my computer, which is on my desk. So I'm overhearing all of these classes. And one thing I hear a lot about is discussions of color. And so I wanted to sort of roll into this conversation what artists and art teachers talk about, what books they talk about when they're talking about color and what they refer people to. And so I want to start with in our Art 201 class with Claudia Smith-Jacobs is the teacher and a wonderful artist here in Falmouth. And she uses as her textbook for that class something called Color Theory, An Essential Guide to Color from Basic Principles to Practical Applications. And so whenever anyone, a student in the class, asks something about color, Claudia refers them to this book by Patty Mollica. And this is what is called, covers the most important aspects of color theory as they relate to oil and acrylic painting, from pigment characteristics and color mixing to color psychology. You'll find all the information you need to make dynamic, harmonious, and meaningful color choices in your own works of art. So that's a color theory book that's basically brought up in every session of this our Art 201 class, which is for intermediate painters. So I wanted to bring that one up first.
Great. Thanks for that. And I should mention, Cynthia just sent us an email and she says Hyannis and Barnstable Village's libraries are also open. Cynthia, thanks for that info. And if the library in your community is open, do let us know. We're happy to share that information because we all know we could use our libraries right now. All right, what have you got next, Jill?
Okay. The next book I have is a book that I first discovered in 1994. And I'm quite sure that this was another Market bookstore book that I discovered, which was a great bookstore that used to live in Falmouth. And this one is called The Primary Colors, and it's three essays by Alexander Thoreau. There's one on blue, one on yellow, and one on red. And as the New York Times said about this when it first came out, Mr. Thoreau makes no bones about emulating Robert Burton's 17th century classic, The Anatomy of Melancholy. Although his subject, the three primary colors, may initially seem like a peculiarly limited topic, he has brought to bear on it all his imaginative gifts as a novelist, and like Burton, he has produced a charmingly elusive book that enchants and provokes and often dazzles. Each of the three essays in this volume, the first on the color blue, the second on yellow, the third on red, reads like a stream of consciousness soliloquy. The effect is similar to that of listening to a gifted jazz musician improvise on a theme, weaving variations into an intricate tapestry while showing off his own skills as an artist. And this is something that you can dive in and come out of and dive in and come out of, because it is just literally everything that he can think about in terms of these colors. So, for example, here is, oh, and his opening quote is actually from Middlemarch. Dorothea Brooke and George Eliot's Middlemarch says, "It is strange how deeply colors seem to penetrate one, like scent." And he starts with blue, and blue begins in this way, blue, and it gives you sort of this feeling, and I think that jazz feeling is right. It just sort of goes, he just lets it all go here. Blue is a mysterious color, hue of illness and nobility, the rarest color in nature. It is the color of the ambiguous depth of the heavens and of the abyss at once. Blue is the color of the shadow side, the tint of the marvelous and the inexplicable, of desire, of knowledge, of the blue movie, of blue talk, of raw meat and rare steak, of melancholy and the unexpected, once in a blue moon, out of the blue. And he goes on that way about each color. And what is sort of sweet about this is he also manages to get two, not one, but two, because as many of you know, he lives on Cape Cod. And he has two mentions of the Cape Cod sky and Cape Cod blues. One of them, he says, a Cape Cod sky and sea in August make one of the richest blues on earth, which I would agree with. It's very great blues. And then he says, there is much blue clay on Cape Cod. The familiar sky blue paint with which early Cape Codders liked to cover their wagons came from mixing the blue clay tills or drifts with skimmed milk, which I had never heard before, so that was sort of interesting. So the whole, it's really, again, just meditations on blue, yellow, and red. And then he went on to do a second book called The Secondary Colors, which are three more essays. And in this case, the colors are orange, purple, and green. And as the Publisher's Weekly reviewer says, they're intoxicating essays on orange, purple, and green. One essay per color comprise a logical sequel to his popular The Primary Colors. And again, he managed to get a Cape Cod reference into orange, of all things. And he says, but no meat is orange, is it? Orange food I tend to think of as mushy, marrowful, and meatless. It would surely color the decor of murder-free menus. The restaurant a friend of mine on Cape Cod and I once wanted to open, where nothing is served that has or had a face. John Reed, in The 10 Days That Shook the World, sympathetically mentions eating at a restaurant in the Soviet Union called I Eat No One. So there's some humor in here as well. And again, the first one is The Primary Colors, the second, The Secondary Colors, and both by Alexander Theroux.
All right. Thank you, Jill. Laura.
Okay. Well, I'm going to stick with the artist theme. And when we talk about color, if you do this show in the future, you might want to have Jane Lincoln on it. She's a wonderful artist here in Falmouth. And years ago, when I first moved to the Cape over 25 years ago, Jane was known for doing paintings, beautiful pastels of cranberry bogs and other pastels. And at some point, she got very interested in color theory and took a class with a woman who studied with the sort of the father of modern color theory, Joseph Albers. And Joseph Albers has a book called Interaction of Color, which is a classic 1963 book. He taught at Black Mountain College. And as I said, Jane Lincoln took a class from one of his proteges, Atte Gropius Johansson, who also had a home here in Wellfleet. And but Joseph Albers' book is talks about how colors morph and shift depending how they are arranged. And so he shows how, for instance, one yellow can look drastically different when placed on a blue versus a brown background, how two different blues can seem to be almost identical if placed on contrasting backgrounds. And so Jane does color theory workshops, and I love the name of one of her workshops that she does here at the Art Center about once a year, Red and Blue Don't Make Violet, Workshop with Jane Lincoln. And then her subheading is, or rather, what kind of violet do they make? And so she's gotten very interested in color theory. She recently had a show at the Kituat Center for the Arts, and all of her work now has this color theory from passed down from Joseph Albers, and you can get his original book, Interaction of Color, which is still in print, and a fascinating book about color.
You're listening to The Point. We're talking about Books on Color with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Laura Reckford, executive director of the Falmouth Arts Center. 866-999-4626 is our number. If you'd like to suggest a book, 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And PJ is calling from South Dennis. Good morning, PJ.
Good morning, Mandy. It's PJ Rainwater. We know each other.
Hi, yes.
Good morning to Jill and Laura. The book that I have, I haven't truthfully read it all the way through yet, but it's called Farming While Black. And it's by Leah Penniman. And it's a nonfiction. It looks to be a really good thing on sustainable agriculture. And Penniman is spelled P-E-N-N-I-M-A-N. And I just think that people need to get back to the earth. And so I didn't know if it applied to your color title, but I just wanted to throw it out there for everybody.
Well, I guess we can say the color you have in the gardens. We can call it's a broad range
person,
we use here.
Right, if you're a black person or an indigenous person that's going back to the land, I thought maybe some of the listeners might want to grab a copy of it.
All right, great. Thanks for sharing. Appreciate that. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jill, what's up next?
Okay, I'm not quite sure where we should go from there, but I think that I'll pull out my Thoreau essays here right now, which is about autumn. And we, of course, are, you know, tomorrow's October 1st. The trees are already starting to turn. And Thoreau wrote this great essay called Autumnal Tints. It is in his collection. The collection I have is Thoreau Essays, Fully Annotated Edition, edited by Jeffrey Kramer, but I'm sure you can find it in many places. And he has this beautiful essay on all kinds of different trees and the colors that they turn and the beauty, of course, that you get from that color. Here's just a little bit, and he also talks about painting, so this sort of fits into all florist things as well, but here is a little bit about the sugar maple. But think not that the splendor of the year is over, for as one leaf does not make a summer, neither does one fallen leaf make an autumn. The smallest sugar maples in our street make a great show as early as the 5th of October, more than any other trees there. As I look up the Main Street, and Thoreau, by the way, was living at 255 Main Street in Concord at the time he was writing this, they appear like painted screens standing before the houses, yet many are green. But now, or generally by the 17th of October, when almost all red maples and some white maples are bare, the large sugar maples also are in their glory, glowing with yellow and red, and show unexpectedly bright and delicate tints. They are remarkable for the contrast they often afford of deep blushing red on one half and green on the other. They become at length dense masses of rich yellow with a deep scarlet blush, or more than blush, on the exposed surfaces. They are the brightest trees now in the street. And then he goes on to talk about his paint box and paint boxes in general. And he says, our paint box is very imperfectly filled. Instead of or beside supplying such paint boxes as we do, we might supply these natural colors to the young. Where else will they study color under greater advantages? What school of design can vie with this? Think how much the eyes of painters of all kinds and of manufacturers of cloth and paper and paper stainers and countless others are to be educated by these autumnal colors. The stationer's envelopes may be of various tints, yet not so various as those of the leaves of a single tree. If you want a different shade or tint of a particular color, you have only to look farther within or without the tree or the wood. These leaves are not many dipped in one dye, as at the dye house, but they are dyed in light of infinitely various degrees of strength and left to set and dry there. So it's this beautiful meditation on changing of the leaves. He goes again through several different kinds of trees and talks about their colors, and it seems like the perfect time of year to be reading some Thoreau about trees.
Yes.
It's called Autumnal Tints is the name of this particular essay.
And we've been sort of concerned about what the foliage would be this fall because it's been such a dry summer. And since it's not a book, but I'm just going to mention that the Globe today has a link to some footage of the fall foliage in the White Mountains that is just really breathtaking. You need a little distraction, a little calm and beauty. Take a look at that or the book, Jill, that Jill just mentioned. All right, Laura, what have you got next?
Well, first of all, Mindy, I don't know why we would need any calm during these times.
Right.
I'll go right to my my next book. You know, when I think about color, I started thinking way back to my first job when I was out of college. I moved to New York City, and I had a job at 20th Century Fox Film Company. And my boss came in one day looking completely different. And I was startled, and she said, well, I've just had my colors done, and I have an entirely new wardrobe. Her hair was a different color. She looked terrific. And I started thinking about that back then in the 80s, now dating myself, there was this thing about getting your colors done. And, you know, are you a spring? Are you a winter?
Right.
And we don't hear that much anymore. But I found a book. It's called Color Me Beautiful. Discover Your Natural Beauty Through the Colors That Make You Look Great and Feel Fabulous by Carol Jackson. And this is the kind of thing that she went through. And a commentator on this book said that she's found it useful to know there's a set of colors that are more likely to make me look healthy and vibrant and others that typically wash me out. She goes on to say, this system makes shopping a million times easier. If it's something I'm going to wear next to my face, I rarely look at colors that are out of my season anymore. And she says, while I sometimes wish I could wear a tangerine orange dress or a bright yellow sweater, most days I'm just relieved to know that I can walk into a store and eliminate three quarters of what's on the rack and just focus on what I know is going to look good. So anyway, this brought me back to this idea of what colors are people, and again, my one experience with someone having her colors down, and my memory is it cost a fortune for her to do it way back then.
Yes.
But that it really changed the way she looked, and she looked great. So I just thought,
yeah,
I wrote in that little 80s thing for everyone.
Laura, I had that book. Laura, I know that book.
Oh.
I had that book. But the problem I had with the book was I couldn't stick to my season. You know, it's like you like these other colors, and whether, you know, you kind of go, let me just try. But, you know, I do know somebody recently, at least in the last decade, who did something similar, you know, found out they didn't call it the seasons, but had the colors that look best on her. And she said it actually made her feel so much better and more confident. So maybe there's something to that.
Yeah. I think that's a big part of it, is how confident it makes the person feel. I remember one comment from that former boss where she says, I can't wear black even in a watch band. You know, this was one of the things they told her, that she must never wear the color black, which in New York City is really a standard that everyone wears. So I was very shocked.
Isn't black
that
a standard everywhere? Yeah. All right, Joe, what have you got next?
Okay, I have got a book by a writer named Maggie Nelson. It's called Bluettes, which should give you an idea. It's about blue, and it's this interesting collection of 240 pieces about blue, but it's also about her life. It's about this person that she is in love with but is no longer in love with her. It's about all kinds of things. As Maria Popova, who does the Brain Pickings column online, if any of you know that, it's a great column. She tried to describe this book, and she wrote, a slim, splendid collection of 240 numbered arguments, meditations, incantations about the color blue, about its tentacled reach into nearly every chamber of Nelson's life and into universal questions of desire and destiny, compulsion and choice, the disoriented delusions of memory, the delicious delusions of love. And here's, it is indeed broken up into 240 sections, although it is a very slim book. And here's the first section. It's number one. Suppose I were were to begin by saying that I had fallen in love with a color. Suppose I were to speak this as though it were a confession. Suppose I shredded my napkin as we spoke. It began slowly, an appreciation, an affinity. Then one day, it became more serious. Then, looking into an empty teacup, its bottom stained with thin brown excrement coiled in the shape of a seahorse, it became somehow personal. Number two, and so I fell in love with a color, in this case, the color blue, as if falling under a spell I fought to stay under and get out from under in turns. And she goes on and on and on, and but it's very interesting. It goes back and forth between this love of colors and of blue and her this failed romance that she is trying to recover from. Here's just a little bit more from 52 in the book. Try if you can not to talk as if colors emanated from a single physical phenomenon. Keep in mind the effects of all the various surfaces, volumes, light sources, films, expanses, degrees of solidarity, solubility, temperature, elasticity on color. So it's a meditative book. It's sort of poetic. It's sort of an essay, and it's sort of this heartbreaking story of her heartbreak. And it is called Bluettes by Maggie Nelson.
Barb in South Dennis sent us a note. She said, a fun kid's picture book about color, The Day the Crayons Came Home. I love this book, Barb. Thanks for suggesting it. She said she doesn't remember the author. The author is Drew Daywaite. The crayons talk to this kid who lost them, neglected them, let them melt. One sends postcards from his travels. In the end, they all get together and create a fun fort using all the colors. Barb, thanks for that. That's a great suggestion. That's a really fun book. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626 if you'd like to suggest a book on color, or send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Laura.
Another beautiful book I found in the Falmouth Art Center's little library with art books is called Confident Color, An Artist's Guide to Harmony, Contrast, and Unity by Nita Leland. This is really a gorgeous book about color. It's got artwork from a number of artists and talking about their personal approaches to color. I'll read a little bit about this book. Color is what you make it. Sensitive, explosive, dreamlike, atmospheric, somber, cheerful. Nita Leland brings logic and intuition together to create a foundation for color selections that allow you to be more inventive, break out of old habits, and experiment with new colors. And as I said, this is just, it's a beautiful book for an artist to sort of have by their palette because it has these thick pages that can be sort of wiped off if paint spills on them. It's that kind of a book where it's really designed to sort of sit in your work area and get dirty, but it goes through different colors and how artists use them, and famous artists, not so famous artists, color wheels, comparing colors, just a gorgeous book about color for the artist or someone taking up a hobby with art.
Yeah, we have an email, and I feel like, I wonder if one of you brought this book last time. It's ringing a bell for some reason. Color Travels Through the Paint Box by Victoria Finlay. Have we mentioned that one? No, not ringing a bell. Well, somebody sent a link to the description of this book. This description may be from another edition of this product. In this vivid and captivating journey through the colors of an artist's palette, Victoria Finlay takes us on an enthralling adventure around the world and through the ages, illuminating how the colors we choose to value have determined the history of culture itself, and how did the most precious color blue travel all the way from remote lapis mines in Afghanistan to Michelangelo's brush. So that is a suggestion from a listener. Thank you. That's Color
on my list
Travels.
Today. I have one fewer book because that was on
okay.
my list.
do you want to say anything else about it? Because I just have that brief little description. So Laura, go ahead. Tell us a little more about it.
Well, that really covers it. You know, it is sort of a history of the palette, if you will. And it goes through, let me see my notes on this. If you've ever wondered where the ultramarine in your watercolor set comes from, or how your favorite pink sweater got its hue, then this is the book for you. She takes us around the world as she chases down the sources of the world's oldest, rarest, and most elusive pigments. And yes, a beautiful book. This is a beautiful book about color. Really terrific
okay.
book.
All right. Jill.
Okay, I've got the next book is called Colors in Fashion, and we were just talking a little bit about fashion. This, however, is a really academic sort of approach, so it's not going to be for everybody because it was put together by academics, so it has that sort of feeling to it. However, it has some really interesting information as well. It's broken up into color and solidarity, color and power, color and innovation, color and desire. And it's really a source in fashion and sociology, design, visual culture, history, the history of technology. And it starts with this quote, "Any history of color is above all a social history. Indeed, for the historian, as for the sociologist and the anthropologist, color is a social phenomenon. It is society that makes color, defines it, gives its meaning, constructs its codes and values, establishes its uses, and determines whether it is acceptable or not." Which I think is really interesting, and this whole idea that it's not color in itself is, you know, nothing until people start telling you what they think mm-hmm. it is. Here's another little bit: color is vital to our very existence, since colorlessness is, after all, equated to lifelessness, sterility, and death. We understand being in the pink as a state of good health, of passing difficult challenges with flying colors, and who isn't happy to receive the red carpet treatment? However, for every positive chromatic idiom, there are many more that ascribe negative connotations to every color under the sun. We regularly turn green with envy, feel blue, are caught red-handed, and might even be named as a yellow belly. So it talks about all the ways that society uses colors. And there's, for example, this one really interesting essay called Purity and Parody, the White Dress of the Suffrage Movement in Early 20th Century Britain. And it talks about why white became the color. It says at the beginning of the 20th century, the color white became a fundamental and central keystone in the symbolic language of the British suffrage movement, countering and complicating the Edwardian taste for white as merely a simple indicator of feminine delicacy and fashionability. The organizing members of the Women's Social and Political Union chose white as one of their official colors in 1908, although in practice it was already widely worn by both supporters and non-supporters of the women's movement alike. So, and what they saw it standing for was purity. You know, white stood for purity, green for hope, purple for dignity. While these three colors adorned and embellished a range of political ephemera and fashion accessories, from suffrage banners for political marches to seemingly innocuous green and purple ribbons and sashes for hats and blouses, white was the dominant color worn. And so it goes on and talks a lot about white was chosen and about the suffrage movement in general. So every chapter has got some really interesting approach to color. So if you're looking for a more academic introduction to various different kinds of colors and what different colors mean, you might try Colors in Fashion, edited by Jonathan Fares and Mary Westerman Bulgara.
You're listening to The Point. We are talking about books on color with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Laura Reckford, executive director of the Falmouth Arts Center. 866-999-4626 if you'd like to suggest a book on color. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Laura, what have you got next?
Well, I found this really sort of precious book about color that I wanted to tell you about. It's called An Atlas of Rare and Familiar Color, and it's out. It's published from the Harvard Art Museum's Forbes Pigment Collection, and that is a working library that houses more than 2,500 colors, and the book has these surprising origin stories for the colors, and so this, again, In the library, you have these antique vials of colored powders, and the book talks about where these all have come from. Just a fascinating sort of odd and unusual book, getting to the heart of where we get colors. And as a comment on the book says, it sparks a feeling of amazement at the insatiable human appetite for rich and vibrant hues.
All right. Jill.
Okay, one of the things I really love about doing the show every month is that I find things I never knew existed before. And this next book is one of the things that I had no idea existed in the world, and I'm delighted to know that it does exist. Fairfield Porter I know as a painter, but it turns out he also wrote poems. And this is actually Fairfield Porter, the collected poems with selected drawings. And they're not necessarily fabulous poems, although there are some very interesting poems. And needless to say, because he's a painter, there's a lot of color in his poems. And because it's the last day of September, I only feel it necessary. I feel it necessary to just share with you a poem he wrote called September, which has a lot to do with what happens in color in September. His poem is September. A warm wind blows all night, no clouds, brilliant stars. The barometer drops on the outermost edge of a hurricane. Rainy morning, the barometer shifts as the wind wheels to the northwest. In adjusting clouds, colors multiply, colors of shells, until the sun bursting through tears them apart again and again. An intense light sucks colors out, a blue-black day. The northwest gale rips white caps off the bay turned dark purple green, the wine dark sea. As night comes, the wind drops, then stars again, Mars in the south, brightest of all. And anybody that was watching the sky this morning could see the colors multiplying as the clouds adjusted. It was an amazing sunrise this morning for those of you that were awake to see it. And the wind was creating spectacular color in the sky, going from the white to the reds and the oranges. So I think Fairfield Porter's poem, September, is a good place to be. And it's from the collected poems with selected drawings.
All right. Laura?
Well, for those people who want to really get into the physics of color, there's a book called Color, Why the World Isn't Gray by Hazel Rosati. And this book explains, I'm going to quote from some comments about the book. This book explains why true blue is so rare in nature, why iridescent colors shimmer, and why fluorescent pigments are so bright. It's an out-of-print book, but you can get a secondhand copy or maybe find it in the library. And it is it just takes you through the physics of colors, what we see in our world, and why it looks like that.
866-999-4626. If you'd like to suggest a book on color, that's 866-999-4626. You can also send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jill, what's next?
Well, the next book I have is called Pure Sea Glass, Discovering Nature's Vanishing Gems.
I love this book.
This is a fabulous book, and it has a lot to do about the color of the glass and what that means. There's a whole section on dating glass by color, and it talks about how in 1970 the recycling movement had gathered momentum, and the once common habit of throwing away bottles began to shift rapidly. So the bounty of bottle glass from the first half of the 20th century currently yields the majority of sea glass still being found today. And during that time, most bottles were brown or green or clear glass, as they are now. And of course, the most valuable kinds of glass, but rare, let's just call it rare, are those that are the most colored. So extremely rare colors, and they have this whole section on sorting sea glass colors by rarity. And the author writes, the following chart is divided into four categories with colors listed within each that are based on years of collecting and sorting close to 30,000 personal pieces of sea glass, also interviews with collectors, and looking researching historical glass. So extremely rare colors are orange, red, turquoise, yellow, black, teal, and gray. You have rare colors in pink, white, citron, cobalt blue. Blue is very rare. And, of course, many of us know the most common colors, because we have found them, are Kelly green and brown and white. So it's a really interesting collection of, and then he goes on to talk about the extremely rare colors like orange, for example, and red. He says of orange sea glass from original orange glass, not golden amber or amberina, is the most rare of all. Several glass manufacturers made translucent orange tableware they called iridescent in the early 1900s, and its pieces are still possible to find. Now, this book was written some time ago, in fact, is the date. So I don't know, 2004. So whether this glass is still found, I don't know. But very interesting how he goes through every color, golden amber, amber, jade, and talks a little bit about the history of each color, including the common colors like Kelly green.
And great photographs, the photographer there. Photographs.
That's right. The photographs in this book are spectacular. It's called Pure Seagrass, Discovering Nature's Vanishing Gems. It's by Richard Lamott, and the photography was by Celia Pearson.
Right. Thank you for that one. Margaret writes, she says two suggestions, Color Me Purple by Alice Walker and The Red Badge of Courage by Stephen Crane. Margaret, thanks for sharing that. And then Annie in Edgartown says, an adorable children's book, What Color is Love by Joan Walsh Argland, I think, or Angland, I mean. Okay, it's a little tiny print there for me. And just since we're talking real quick, I want to mention children's books. If you're looking for diversity in children's books, that's our topic next Wednesday. We're going to talk about diverse children's books with educator Mary Cronin. So if you're interested in children's books, you want to tune in for that. All right, Laura, what have you got next?
Well, I'll throw out two children's books because I love children's books, so I have a lot of them at home. And I think we might have mentioned Eric Carle last time, but he has something, a book, Brown Bear, What Do You See?, written by Bill Martin Jr. and illustrated by Eric Carle. And it's just an adorable book about colors, goes through where the brown bear, he first sees the red bird sees the yellow duck, and on, just a gorgeous book about color for preschoolers or younger than that. And I'll throw out another, really cute, children's book about color. It's called Mouse Paint by Ellen Stoll Walsh. And she goes through, the primary colors, because these white mice, these three white mice, see some colors and they dip themselves into the colors, red, yellow, and blue, and then they mix into they mix the primary colors to create the secondary colors, and again, just an adorable book about colors for kids.
All right, thanks for that. Jill.
Well, and I also brought an Eric Carle book, which is The Artist Who Painted a Blue Horse, which is an homage to Franz Marc, who was a painter who liked to, apparently, he painted his horses blue, and he's particularly famous for his blue horses, and the book begins with the kids saying, I am an artist and I paint, and it goes from a blue horse to a red crocodile to a yellow cow, all these beautiful double spread portraits of various animals, a pink rabbit. It is a really sweet book and includes a polka-dotted donkey at the end. And the child at the end says, I am a good artist. And you see a picture of a blue horse, which is, again, the inspiration for the book itself. And so a really simple and beautiful book called The Artist Who Painted a Blue Horse.
All right. Laura?
Well, this is a good one to come near the end of our talk, called Chromophobia, which is Fear of Color, by David Batchelor. And this is a book of philosophy and art history giving an account of how the fear of color took root in Western society. The author shows how color has been equated with childishness, femininity, primitive culture, exoticism, superficiality, and therefore marginalized. So just an interesting sort of philosophy book about how color has played out in society to marginalize elements of the community.
I'm going to throw out another children's book, which is perfect for this time of year. It's called Frederick by Leo Leone. And so this is the description of the book. While the other field mice stockpile food for the winter, Frederick gathers rays from the sun, a rainbow of colors, and marvelous worlds. Frederick, an apparently lazy mouse, has a special surprise for the mice who thought he should have been storing supplies for the winter. So as it gets to winter, they say, oh, Frederick, where is that? In the warmth of the sun, and he takes the colors of the flowers. And it's a really sweet little book, and it's called Frederick by Leo Leone. All right, Jill.
Well, I would not want to end the show without mentioning Marge Piercy's book, Colors Passing Through Us, and it is named, it's a collection of her poems, but the poem that it is titled for is Colors Passing Through Us, and it's a beautiful poem about color and love, and it begins with purple, and it goes through red and orange and yellow, green and blue. Here's a little bit on blue. Blue as cornflowers, delphiniums, bachelor's buttons, blue as Roquefort, blue as saga, blue as still water, blue as the eyes of a Siamese cat, blue as shadows on new snow, as a spring azure sipping from a puddle on the blacktop. And it goes back to cobalt as the midnight sky when day has gone without a trace and we lie in each other's arms, eyes shut and fingers open, and all the colors of the world pass through our bodies like strings of fire. So a really beautiful poem, well worth reading the entire poem, Colors Passing Through Us, starting with purple and ending with cobalt. It's Marge Piercy's in her collection, Colors Passing Through Us.
All right. And Tricia writes in a suggestion, Hailstones and Halibut Bones. She says it's a terrific children's book by Mary O'Neill. Tricia, thanks for that. And then we have another, The Artist's Handbook of Materials and Methods by Robert Mayer, 5th edition, explains how the artist can make his or her own paint from ground pigments. Great suggestion there. All right, Laura.
I have one similar to those suggestions. It's called The Color Collector's Handbook by Leah Martha Rosenberg. She's an artist and a co-founder of a pop-up museum about color. And the book is like a color journal. It helps you notice the surprising places that different colors appear. Kids would love this book, and also adults. It's a beautiful book about color.
All right. We have about a minute and a half, Jill.
Okay, well, look for the Book of Greens, the Cook's Compendium, because it's all about cooking things that are green. And it has a seasonal chart that takes you from spring to summer to fall to winter, and which are the best greens for each season. The seasonal list for each green in the book is based on North American availability. And as she says, many of the greens span more than one season, though many of these greens are available year-round. And she has this great chart for the peak times of each green, from lettuces to kale to herbs to all sorts of things you might not have heard of that are green, and then fabulous recipes and fabulous illustrations, photographs of all the green things. For example, mâché rosettes, which I was not familiar with, succulent, juicy, delicate, and tender, like tiny heads of butter lettuce, just as velvety in texture and generously flavored. It's also like the popcorn of lettuces because the sweet and nutty clusters pop in the mouth, also called corn lettuce and lamb's lettuce. So take a look at the Book of Greens by Jen Lewis.
All right. And again, we will have a link to the list of books that we talked about this morning a little bit later today at our website, capeandislands.org. Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Laura Reckford, executive director at the Falmouth Arts Center. Thank you both. Some great suggestions today.
Thank you. That was fun.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.